Creatures of the Night.
Yeah. Is this the how many years anniversary now, man? Do the math.
Well,
40
last
years?
Last year, we did an episode for the 40th anniversary of Music from the Elder.
Right.
Which, in my opinion, was and is the most criminally underrated Kiss album in the entire Kiss catalog. And in probably in rock and roll, in all of rock music.
A lot of people share that opinion. A lot of people do. Kiss fans do.
And so anybody that knows us as lifelong friends, for the most part, I'd say maybe 99.9% of everything we listen to and have read and have liked and disliked, man, we've pretty much been in agreement on most things, man. But when it comes to Creatures of the Night, we've always disagreed on Creatures.
I'm going to stop you right there and say, you not only disagree with me, but I think you're going to disagree with the majority of Kiss fans. The majority of Kiss fans are going to find blasphemous if you don't love Creatures of the Night.
It really is, and I'm the first person to say this. Anytime I say this, talk about Creatures with any Kiss fan, I say, look, what I'm about to say is very unpopular. I am in the minority. I'm in a very rare minority when it comes to Creatures of the Night. But it is now the 40th anniversary of Creatures of the Night. I've never said that I dislike Creatures of the Night. Never thought it sucked. I think it's a good album. You can say it's a great album. I won't argue that.
Mm-hmm. I would say that.
But my point has really unfolded over the past 10 years with this revisionist history surrounding Creatures of the Night. And I guess we'll get into that a little further, man, down the conversation. But
I think I know where you're going with that, but okay.
I just always said it's like the most painfully overrated Kiss album in the catalog. But again, we'll get into that. But Creatures of the Night, man, it's a celebrated Kiss album. All generations of Kiss fans love it. A lot of our generation of Kiss fans didn't take to it very well the first time around.
Right.
But I think the times have obviously changed the way people see it and hear it. Let's go back to the fall of 1982.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of your memory, it is the fall of 1982. We are in seventh grade. We're just starting middle school.
Yeah.
The both of us have probably been about at least a year or two removed from Kiss.
Right.
We both went crazy with them from like 1976 to about 79, 80.
Right.
You kind of jumped off the ship around Unmasked.
Exactly.
And I jumped off at Creatures because of Creatures. I had the Elder. I loved the Elder when it came out. I was still on board. And I know we both didn't get into Creatures until a few years after the fact.
Right.
I didn't like it at first. But on release of Creatures, man, what is your memory of Creatures being the new Kiss album, man? What were you doing? What were you listening to your best of your memory? And what did you think of it? Did you want it? Did you give a crap about it? Were you aware of it?
I was aware of it, but didn't give a crap about it. As you said, I kind of jumped off at around Unmasked, you know? Why I jumped off is an interesting question, because I actually love Dynasty, you know? And I forgive me if I've said this on a past episode, but I remember loving Dynasty. And here I am in the mall or someplace with my dad getting the Atari 2600 for the first time, the Atari that everybody loved and seeing the new Kiss album unmasked and not giving a shit for the first time in my life. And it made no sense because I loved the previous album. I just think that I, you know, and now I'm 10 years old, I guess. I'm a different person than I was when I was 7 and 8. I don't know. Like, I question the conventional wisdom that everybody bailed on Kiss because they no longer were a hard rock band, that they betrayed their fans with the disco sound. I think that's overblown, maybe. I think a whole generation of kids like you and me just started to have different priorities for a couple of years. But getting back to 82, man, I'm not quite back into Kiss yet, no. And I'm very much an MTV baby, man. I'm loving all these MTV bands I'm seeing, like the Rush Moving Pictures videos. I love the Cars, Shake It Up. I love the Kinks. I don't know how the Kinks got in there, but I love them too. Starting to get into Judas Priest, you know, another thing coming. And that's where I was at musically. It wasn't until, weirdly, this watching on MTV one Saturday night, this live Animalize concert, which is an album that really stinks, I still think. But I watched and rediscovered Kiss again. Like, hey, I like Kiss again. Like, I jumped back on board in the mid-80s. But no, when Creatures came out, I didn't give a shit. Not at all.
A lot of people didn't. It was, I like you, I didn't go through this period of, oh, Kiss did a pop album, Kiss did a disco album. We're going to, you know, it's the new wave of British heavy metal. And, you know, there's Judas Priest and there's Saxon and there's Iron Maiden and there's this and there's that. And, you know, like I was 10 years old when Unmasked came out.
So right.
There's this whole thing of like, oh, think of all the great hard rock albums of 1980. And then there's Kiss Unmasked. I mean, yeah, that's true. But we were little kids when The Elder came out. It was the new Kiss album. It was great. I loved it. I knew it was different, but I was still interested. I didn't tell people I liked Kiss because there was that stigma. You know, you would get beat up if you told people you liked Kiss at that point. So
yeah, you would.
You just stayed in the closet.
Yeah.
If you liked Kiss in 1981, 82. So I remember 82 going into that fall. I'm a Who fan. My favorite band is The Who.
Right.
I had gone from, you know, I loved Dynasty when it came out in 79, but somewhere around 80 when a Kiss puts out Unmasked, I'm loving Cheap Trick and The Cars and Dream Police was new and Panorama was new. Candio was like a year old. Blondie's Eat to the Beat was new. You know, I was into Blondie, Cheap Trick, and The Cars. Those were my three bands, and the Jay Giles Band. Those were my three bands of 1980, three or four bands, 80, 81. But again, by late 81, Christmas, I see this commercial for this weird album by Kiss called The Elder. And I really didn't move on it. I didn't say I wanted it. I just kind of acknowledged it and say, oh, Kiss is still around. And I got it for Christmas and I loved it. And now it's a year later. So I remember the first thing I remember reading about Creatures of the Night in a magazine in ShopRite and thinking like, oh, wow, that's quick. They're having a new album coming out already. Like The Elder, you know, what about The Elder? So I knew the title, Creatures of the Night. Oh, that sounds pretty cool. And then I was waiting for you and your mom to come and pick me up to go to CCD. So CCD, we used to go at night once a week. And I remember seeing the I Love It Loud video. And right off the bat, I hated it. It was the first time I actually like, I just felt very troubled by it for some reason. It had this very jingoistic football cheer, you know, like, I hated it from the beginning, you know, it just rubbed me the wrong way for some reason. And I remember like, I probably said to you, like, I just saw the new Kiss song, you know, and I remember nothing of that, but, and I remember like going to CCD that night. All right. And, saying to somebody like, oh, there's a new Kiss album or something. And you're like, oh, Kiss sucks, man. Like they copy Motley Crue. And I was just like, who the fuck's Motley Crue? you know. And it reminds me of like a lot of young kids today that are like, you know, have this perception of Creatures as this classic Kiss album when they weren't around to see that Kiss could not even get or could not get arrested in 1982 because this revisionist history has Creatures as this classic monolithic Kiss record that's, you know, that is in the conversation with Destroyer, which it's not and hasn't been until like the last 5 to 10 years. So that's really my only problem with that. But again, I keep jumping ahead a bit. I got off the train a couple weeks later where, again, for some reason, I associate CCD with the beginning of this record, because we were always my few memories, my initial memories of it is of going to CCD and always waiting to be picked up. And PM Magazine is on. There's this show, PM Magazine.
Yeah.
Whatever it was like 6:30 at night,
right?
7 o'clock at night, whatever. And they're like, if you're going to see Kiss, be warned or be, you know, don't get fooled. Ace Frehley is no longer with, and then they show this guy, you know, Ace Frehley is taking some time off or blah, 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 or whatever is going on, but Ace Frehley is not in Kiss. And meet Vinnie Vincent. And they showed him, and he's just this lanky, rubbery figure, man, with this guitar that I hated. And I just hated everything about him. I thought his name was stupid. I didn't like his hair. I didn't like the way he stood on the stage. I didn't like his guitar. And that was the moment where I was like, well, no Peter, no Ace, big problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, there's a sure. consensus within the Kiss community that says no Peter, no Ace, no problem. In the fall of 1982, man, early winter 1983, when Kiss began touring and we heard that Kiss was going to be on the road, and we were 12 years old and we're like, maybe we're finally old enough to go to a concert. And I actually started, well, I don't like this song, I Love It Loud, but we might get to see Kiss. And I find out that Ace is no, at that point, man, the wind went out of the sails, man, the fucking gates, you know, the portcullis, man, just crashed down. It was the, like in an instant, like turning off a light switch, man. I did not give a fuck about Kiss any longer, man. It's like, no Ace Frehley in Kiss? Fuck that, man.
So as it turned out, you wouldn't have seen him in concert anyway, because you would have had to go to what, Poughkeepsie? Was like the closest
because,
place.
Because nobody cared. So like, right. They say no Peter, no Ace, no problem. A lot of people don't take into account the fact that a lot of people jumped off the ship because Ace left, man, so much so that they didn't even bother continuing the tour. They didn't even bother booking the rest of the tour. They didn't even bother announcing a Madison Square Garden gig because they were so unpopular that they probably didn't want to go through with not selling out the Garden for not, you know, because they, you know, they had to cancel a show for, in 1979. Can you imagine if they didn't even sell one show at the Garden in 1983? So a lot of people forget that this album was rejected. The concerts were rejected. The tour was rejected. It was probably cut short in an emergency where they ended it in Rio, man, didn't finish the US tour, and just quickly said, fuck, what do we do? Quick, take off the makeup, get out a new album.
Yeah.
And that's how quick, between Rio in June, I think it was June of 83, and then in August, they're taking their makeup off. In less than 8 weeks, that's how quick they made that decision. That's how quick they moved on Lick It Up. And Lick It Up in September.
They're moving very quickly, man. It's one of my most fascinating periods of Kiss, man. Just reading about Paul Stanley's depression at the time, how he couldn't get out of bed. Of course, his story about flicking the guitar pick and it would sail over the crowd onto the floor and no one could grab it. And that girl and that woman, Donna Dixon, who broke his heart and left him for Dan Aykroyd. I just love that whole era, man, and all the fucking, just, it's just, it's just, It's crazy, man.
And you know, and it's not like I got off the train anyway, because I was pulled back in for Lick It Up just out of curiosity. Okay.
Yeah, you didn't get off the train long, because I remember you were back on for Lick It Up.
Yeah, I got Lick It Up the day it came out. I ran home to see the world premiere video. And like so many of us did, you know, and then but at that point we were getting pissed off because it was a second generation of Kiss fans that not so much second generation, but kids our age who suddenly acted like there was this new band out called Kiss.
Right.
And their first album is Lick It Up. And
see, this
is
how you brought that up, that man. Are we first generation Kiss fans? Or are we actually second generation Kiss
we're
fans?
We're first generation fans because we were there since the beginning.
We were there since about Rock and Roll Over. Am I wrong about that?
I became aware of Kiss when Destroyer came out.
Okay.
Destroyer was the new album when I became aware of Kiss.
I was thinking about this show this morning, and I was wondering, are first generation Kiss fans like people
yeah,
that
because
were there
we,
for hotter than
got,
hell?
We got those records. We got those records new, yeah. man. I got Rock and Roll Over when it was new.
Yeah.
You know, we bought those records in their first printing, man.
Right, huh? We did.
So maybe, I obviously didn't get the first, I got the first record in 1978. It was already in its second printing. It was already in the Filmwork, like the Filmworks label. Like the first printing of the first few albums came on that dark blue, almost brownish, greenish label with the guy with the hat.
Smoking. Yeah, it's got the hat smoking, yeah.
And that was the original record. But the next printing of those early records was on like the Brown Casablanca label. Like I Know You're Hotter Than Hell was on the Brown Casablanca label.
Yeah.
And I know my first Kiss record was on like the Filmworks label that later came out in 77. Right? And that was the label that Alive 2 and Love Gun was first issued on, right? So there were, we are first generation Kiss fans because we were into Kiss in 1976. We got into them during their second year of existence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of older fans, but we were buying the same albums that those older fans were buying them on the same days.
Yeah, man.
We were younger, but make no mistake, we are first generation Kiss fans.
I like it.
So yeah, I mean, I didn't really give Creatures a chance until you got it around 85, man. You're getting Creatures. You're like, I got Creatures of the Night. Did you know? And I was like, yeah, I didn't even bother with Creatures. I didn't like the single. I didn't like I Love It Loud. And then we never heard anything else from it. So it took a couple of years for us to both really get into Creatures. And I mean, I liked parts of it, but because it took me a while to get into metal, because I was into the Stones and the Who and Blondie and like new wave stuff. It took me a year or two past everybody else. While everybody else was on the metal, into the metal trend by 82, 83. Yeah. It took me a year or two later, man, because I remember borrowing all your Judas Priest records.
Yeah.
Getting into Priest about a year after you were. You know, so by the time we went to see, and when we saw them on the Vengeance tour or the Defenders tour.
Right.
You had already known their entire catalog. And I was still getting into them.
Yeah, yeah.
So by the time we actually heard Creatures of the Night, I was like, man, I don't like them trying to be this metal band. This is where my problem with Creatures begins, where throughout history, Paul Stanley has always conveniently, every 10 years, starts to change the language every 10 years, where he introduces new words into his vocabulary. And in 1982, he started using the word metal, and he started addressing Kiss as a metal band.
Uh-huh.
And those of us, even though we were 12, we knew better. And we knew that Kiss was no metal band. And looking back on it, it's even more ridiculous, because my problem with Creatures, aside from people, you know, like millennial critics ranking it number two under Destroyer in the way in the album ranking, you know, an album that should be no better than number 15 or 16 in their 20 studio albums or whatever, however many studio albums they have, now gets ranked in the top two Kiss albums. And that's just fucking blasphemy as far as I'm concerned. One of many problems I have with Creatures is that the revisionist history paints it as this classic Kiss album. And number two, that it was Kiss getting back to Kiss after a three album left turn, where they made their quote unquote disco album in Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
They made their pop album in The Elder, quote unquote. You know, I think that these words can be questioned, disco, pop, where they, because neither of them, you know, we could say, yeah, Unmasked is a pop album, but Dynasty was not a disco album. They made a disco song or two, you know, arguably I Was Made for Loving You is in a disco beat, and Dirty Living is in a disco beat. All right. And then they made The Elder, their attempt at progressive music, a concept album. And then Kiss got back to Kiss with Creatures of the Night. And my argument has been Kiss never got back to Kiss. Kiss never appeared again. What Kiss was ended on side four of Alive 2. And that, see, that is...
Now that you mention that, I would argue that Creatures of the Night is close to a return to form, but certainly closer to Rock and Roll Over Love Gun and side four than those other albums you were talking about. It's close to a return to form.
Because it's harder rock. It's hard rock.
Right. And why are you saying it's not a quote-unquote classic album? You keep saying it's not a classic. Why are you saying that?
Because it went from this invisible album that they didn't want anything to do with. They didn't know what to do with Creatures. I mean, 2 years later, they reissued it with a different cover. And they still didn't put Vinny on the cover. They put Bruce Kulick on the fucking cover. It was like this bastard child that nobody wanted. They didn't know what to do with it. So, oh, go in a corner here. It was like Oliver on the Brady Bunch, you know? They had, and we find out there's so many musicians playing on it that to this day we still don't know who fully played on it.
Right.
It's the most un-Kiss album, Kiss album of the whole catalog, because it's like the least Kiss album, because it's probably like the least Kiss members playing on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's for sure.
It's the first album where only Paul and Gene played on, you know. You know, Eric, well, you know, arguably Eric is a new member, right?
Yeah.
So he played on it. People make this big thing about this fucking big boomy outdated drum, 80s drum sound that people seem to love. I think it's fucking dated. It's got that fucking huge boomy 80 trendy drum sound that Creatures suffers from, but people love it. I think it's fucking horrible, man.
Yeah,
it's like that trendy 80s drum sound, man, and they're proud of it. It's like, whoa, the drum sound, it's fucking, you know, it's awful. Like, I hated when I used to hear the beginning of I Love It Loud. I used to get up and go to the bathroom when they did it in concert. The only thing more boring than I Love It Loud was Bore Machine, and fucking like it's like plotting like the longest 4 minutes of your life, man. I don't know, man. Like, to me, it was the beginning of Gene Simmons' worst writing stage, man. Like where he just started writing shit, killer. It's like this throwaway. Like, and I'll tell you what I love about Creatures of the Night, because there is stuff I love about Creatures of the Night. I love the title track. I love Paul Stanley on that album.
I hope you love the title track.
Paul Stanley, man, is fucking. I Still Love You is a great ballad, man. It's one of their best fucking songs, man.
I was actually going to ask you.
Sinner. Sinner is as good as anything Gene did in the 70s.
I agree, man.
All right.
I was going to actually ask you, if you put Creatures of the Night on, what tracks are you listening to?
I listen to about, I like about four, I like four songs off Creatures. All right. I like the title track. I love the title track. I love Saint and Sinner. It's
Saint and Sinner is awesome. Yeah.
I Still Love You. And I like danger, man, but danger, even danger rubs me the wrong way, man, because it reminds me of, like, you know, like it's just very hokey, man. And like, it's like Mighty Mouse or something, like, oh man, like nothing can stand in my way. Oh man, yeah, the rest of my day. Like, it sounds like a breakfast cereal commercial or something, you know, it's just like, and it's like, it's just like, oh, that's kind of, I don't know about that, man. But I do like danger, man. But there's, like I said, there's parts of it that are a little bit over the top. Like, Paul's really over the top in that, and it sounds like he's doing a commercial for Wheaties or something.
Yeah. Yeah,
the,
man.
The lyrics are just a little too corny, man.
I'm going to disagree with your Gene assessment. I think that's arguably Gene's best record, man. I don't think Gene's writing starts to suffer until the next record, and then really hits rock bottom and Animal Eyes, is my opinion, man.
Yeah, but, I won't argue that, because Saint and Sinner is a good song. I don't want to create the impression that I hate Creatures, man. I don't hate Creatures. It's a great album. It's a great album. I just think it's overrated. I don't buy this revisionist history that is this classic Kiss record. Yeah, Paul and Gene always kept those songs in the set list. They insisted on always keeping three or four songs at a time on every given tour, man. They always had three or four Creatures songs in their set list.
Yeah, I think statistically, man, the title track, I Love It Loud, War Machine are like three of the most played songs like throughout their career. Man.
Sometimes there were more Creatures songs in the set list than whatever their new album was at the time.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I guess you got to blame or thank Gene and Paul for always insisting that the album was good. But it's this newer generation of fans that have this view of it like it's this shrine, you know, like it's like the Buddha himself, or it's like, you know, it should be like you bow to it, and it wasn't always that way, you know. And then you have this new generation of critics who now rank it, you know, like the Kiss, like if you rank the Kiss albums in 1990, right, Creatures of the Night would be ranked at the very bottom, you know. And if you rank Creatures of the Night, if you ranked the Kiss albums in 2000, Creatures of the Night would still have been ranked at the very bottom. It wasn't until like the last 10 to 15 years where critics and even fans started, I guess, the beginning of the Kiss podcast era, like the beginning of like Kiss Science Theater and Sides of the Coin and the FAQ, like where the consensus started to change and they started to redirect and rewrite Creatures' story as this classic Kiss album that, you know, people either changed their minds about or they started to pretend it was bigger even back in the 80s. I mean, at least the guys on Three Sides, you know, those guys keep it real, man. They, you know, like Branvold, man, those guys, like Branvold, Creatures of the Night was his first Kiss concert. So it's a special era for him, man.
And right.
Rightly so. But even they know what's real and what's not. And they know that the album flopped on release. The album was not a classic fucking album from the get-go. You know, the story was not that way, man.
Well, you know what? This kind of thing is not unheard of, man. I mean, look at the reception that Exile on Main Street supposedly got when it came out. It took 10 years for people to say, holy shit, that's actually a great album. Look at Velvet Underground. Like, no one gave a shit about them. It took them 30 or 40 years later. The most important band of the 60s, man. You know, so these kind of things, you know, with the passing of time, people reevaluate shit.
How do we know, like, Stranger Things or some Netflix TV show isn't going to take, like, in one of their future shows, isn't going to take too much blood from Rolling Stones Undercover? And put it in one of their episodes and it's going to go to number one. And within 5 years, Generation Z is going to make Undercover one of the greatest Stones albums. Like, how do we know that that's not going to happen? You know what I mean? So that's basically, you know, that I think beginning with this generation of millennial critics that has elevated when you see these Kiss album rankings in, you know, classic rock magazines, and you suddenly see Creatures of the Night at number two, right behind Destroyer. And you see Creatures of the Night is above Hotter Than Hell and above Rock and Roll Over. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
I got you, man.
So
I would have a really hard time ranking my Kiss albums 1, 2, 3, 4, man. I mean, shit. I mean, Rock and Roll Over a Love Gun, which one's better? That's like, oh man, like I don't even want to
it's
think.
which one do you like better?
Yeah,
Which one do you like
it's
more? I
hard.
mean, it's
It's
always
hard.
subjective. All these things are subjective, man.
Yeah, you know.
But you also have to be objective about your favorite bands. And Kiss fans have this, not all, but I'd say most Kiss fans have this problem being objective about Kiss, man. You know, like everything is great, everything's their best album, you know, whatever Gene and Paul says goes,
Right,
you
right,
know, and Ace and Peter are dicks until Paul and Gene says they're not.
right.
And
Yeah,
that's it, man. And you know, you got to be objective about your favorite artists, man. I mean, I love Bruce Springsteen, but I could spend an hour telling you why he sucks, why I have a problem with a lot of the things that he's done, man.
sure.
And there are Bruce fans that are going to be like, "Oh, that's blasphemy. How dare you? You're not a real fan." And that's what Kiss fans do, man. Kiss fans are at war. Like if you say anything bad about Creatures, God's going to fucking, you know, if you say, like, and then there are the Vinnie Vincent fans, man, who have made him Jesus Christ, man. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine there are people that are fans of any artist who like or love every single thing they do. I mean, you gotta sometimes say, hey, this isn't so good, man. But yeah, that whole thing about did Vinnie Vincent save Kiss, that's a crock of shit, man. That whole conversation that was happening.
Yeah.
But,
Well, yeah, but that's a joke for them. That's not a real conversation that, I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, there are a few guys that do take it seriously, but it's a running joke. It's kind of like on Rock Under Fire, like our running joke is rock and roll, is rock dead. You know, is rock dead? You know, did Vinnie Vincent save Kiss? Is rock dead? You know, where we play devil's advocate and say rock is dead, but you know, rock's not dead. Rock never did die. You know, but we play devil's advocate. You know, hey, Vinnie Vincent saved Kiss, and that's what those guys do. You know, it's a joke. You know, but.
I mean, regarding Vinny, man, I'm an Ace guy through and through, you know that. But my second favorite Kiss guitar player is Vinny, man. You know, like I love the live recordings from those eras, man. Tommy Thayer, I have no feeling for. I don't have no opinion. Mark St. John sucks, which leaves us with Bruce Kulick. I suspect you like Bruce better than Vinny. Is Bruce Kulick your second favorite Kiss guitar player?
I don't have a second favorite Kiss guitar player because they're I don't I well, I mean I like Bruce Kulick. Bruce Kulick is a great guy, man.
He's a great guy.
He's I love what he does single-handedly holding up whatever the legacy of 80s Kiss is. He champions 80s Kiss, man. He goes on the cruises, he brings his band who play that music just as well as Kiss did in the 80s, man. And he keeps that alive for the fans that champion the 80s version of Kiss. Guitar wise, man, he was like very flashy in the 80s. He sounded, I mean, basically that's what everybody was doing in the 80s, and he did what Paul and Gene called for. Some of his solos I do like. I love the solo in Tears Are Falling, man. I think that's a brilliant classic guitar solo. I think it elevates that song. And then there's a lot of flashy stuff like No 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 that I don't care for. I think there's a lot of stuff like I'll Fight Hell to Hold You. I think he adds to that. Some of the stuff that he did on Hot in the Shade is really good. And another album that a lot of Kiss fans have my head for is Revenge. I think that's probably even more overrated. Well, it's overrated alongside Creatures for the same reason that Creatures is overrated. You know, people say it was his return to form. And again, I'm not going to talk about Revenge, but you know, it's an album that I was never crazy about. But a lot of Kiss fans, a lot of 80s Kiss, a lot of fans of that era of the band say Bruce Kulick didn't become Bruce Kulick until Revenge. And I don't believe
Oh,
that. I
yeah.
think Bruce was doing some of his better work as early as Asylum, man.
Yeah, Revenge is another one of those albums that people will say is better than Hotter Than Hell or Dressed to Kill, which is just like smoking crack and crazy, right?
Because I think Kiss fans are, I think, like I said, with Paul Stanley, like there's a damaged child in every Kiss fan, especially first generation Kiss fans. And I agree with them, man. It's kind of like, yeah, you know, when they say, you know, fuck the haters, forget the haters, we won. And again, it's this sentiment that we watched our band go the distance in the face of all the years and decades of hatred and negativity. And we're still here and they're still here. And it's 50 years and fuck the haters. We won. And
yeah,
I feel that, man. I feel that because there is that damaged child that we went where we lived through a lot of bullshit as Kiss fans. But you got to get over that. And I'm over that. And I know you're over that. But a lot of Kiss fans, I think, are just damaged by identity and damaged by what they think Kiss is supposed to be. So when you take these albums, Creatures of the Night and Revenge, which are by design heavier than the rest of the Kiss catalog, you latch onto that this is what Kiss is. And so you say Revenge is a great album because you think you're supposed to.
Right.
It's for the same reason that you say, well, The Elder is horrible because you think you're supposed to.
Right.
You know, and that's my problem with Kiss fans. Not all, but a lot of them that elevate these two records more than Rock and Roll Over. Really?
Yeah.
That's where I have a problem. So
I hear you, man. there's one song you didn't mention, man. And you know what's funny? I didn't hear it until actually listened to it today. Bachman Turner Overdrive's version of Rock and Roll Hell.
Rock and Roll Hell, yeah.
I never listened to that before today, dude. And it's I guess you're familiar with it.
I never liked it. I never cared for it. It was always like a throwaway song for me. It was a song you skipped over on side two.
You're talking about the Kiss song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the chorus is the same, but the verses are radically different. So, like, Gene stole the chorus, kind of, I guess, but it's very different songs.
Ace remade it on one of his last albums, too.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, man. But it had me thinking, man, I should really get more into Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Well, yeah, let me go. I mean, just like, let's take Creatures song by song. And you get into why I don't think like it has good moments, but I don't think it's a great album. I don't think it's a classic album. Mm-hmm. I see why people think it's a classic album and it's fine. All right. Yeah. Celebrate it. Happy 40th to Creatures of the Night. Good for Creatures, man. I love it for what it is. That's it. But I don't think it is what everybody else thinks it is or says it.
Sure.
Great. Sure. But that's just my opinion. There's room enough for all kinds of opinions in Kiss world. Apparently a lot of Kiss fans don't believe that, you know, like Eddie Trunk says, you're supposed to be in line with the marching orders.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're persona non grata. Right. So that's why I say, fuck you to that. But that said, I forgot where I was going with this, man. Where did I start with this? Oh, fuck. I was going to make a good point here.
I started with Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Okay, yeah. So, but if you take it from beginning to end, okay, Creatures of the Night, great song, love it. Saint and Sinner, great song, love it.
Love it.
Keep Me Coming, Color by Numbers, Trying Too Hard, as far as I'm concerned. And it's kind of mediocre at best.
Keep Me Coming, I think, is Kiss trying to sound more like Led Zeppelin than
right.
any
it's
other
color
song.
Color by Numbers. It's like they connected the dots and made a picture and then colored it in.
I would agree with that one.
Here's a song, okay? It's a throwaway song as far as I'm concerned. All right? What comes after Keep Me Coming?
That's Rock and Roll Hell, isn't it?
Is it Rock and Roll Hell? But okay, we might be going off the different...
Or is it... No, I think it's Rock and Roll Hell.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so Rock and Roll Hell. Okay, throwaway song as far as I'm concerned. Okay, then there's Danger, which I like, but there are little cringeworthy parts that, like I said, sound like a breakfast cereal commercial.
Yeah.
Like, nothing can stand in my way. I'll make the best of my day. It's fucking hokey.
Right. All right.
I Love It Loud. Boring. Fucking yawn fest. I Still Love You. Love you. Love it. Great fucking song, man. Great ballad. Fucking Paul at his fucking best, man.
Mm.
Killer.
Killer.
Boring. Throwaway song. All right. You got like three... Or four holes for me. I think there's four holes in it. There's four.
I do love that. I love that guitar riff in Killer, though. I do.
And then War Machine, which to me, like I always call Bore Machine. You know, that was my bathroom song in concert. I don't know how much of it Brian Adams wrote.
Mm. But
like when I first heard the first thing I thought was they ripped off Only You. You know, because it's straight out of Only You.
Oh, that part, yeah.
Like, it's straight out of Only You. So Bryan Adams couldn't have written that part. But I get it. You know, you better watch out. I'm a war machine. It sounds tough, man. It's the demon. It's the last demon song of the demon era before the makeup came off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before Unholy was written, before Larry Mazer said to Gene, you got to bring back the demon.
Right.
War Machine was that last song. So I get it. It sounds tough. It is tough. It projects the image that they want you to think Kiss is.
Yeah.
But Kiss is also Dirty Living, and Kiss is also Sure Know Something in Shandy.
Yeah.
And Kiss, I'm sorry, man, but Kiss is not any more War Machine than they are Shandy. They're equal parts War Machine.
Mm-hmm. They are sure. Shandy.
Fuck that.
So yeah.
That's my problem with this overblown importance that they give to this record. Again, Hail Creatures, it's fucking Kiss, celebrate it. Happy 40th Creatures of the Night. We love you for what you are, but I don't like you for what you're not, because I don't think you're all that much, man. In the eyes of the big picture, man, up against Hotter Than Hell, you're not that great. Up against Rock and Roll Over, you're not that great. Against Animal Eyes, you're great. Against, you know, against Psycho Circus and Sonic Boom and Monster, you're a masterpiece.
And Crazy Night.
You Creatures does not deserve to be number two on any fucking Kiss ranking, man. You know.
I won't argue with
that. I'm sorry. I said my piece.
Before you completely lose your voice, man, I mean, I talked earlier, this is one of the fascinating things about this era. You know, it's a real dark time for the band. Paul's depressed, but they follow it up with the biggest concert they ever had in Rio, which I wish they would release like a nice soundboard copy on vinyl, because that's a fucking hot concert, man. The recordings that I hear from like the Asylum Crazy Nights tour don't sound nearly as kick fucking ass as that. And I do give Vinny some of the credit, but talk about that.
All right. I'll talk about that. I agree with you about the recordings about Asylum, because we know that, like, starting with the Animal Eyes tour and following through with Asylum and Crazy Nights, those three tours were the same tours. You know, fill in what, take out your new song. I mean, fill in with whatever your new album is and throw in a few, two, three new songs. You know, you're going to get Fits Like a Glove second or third after Cold Gin. You're going to get Paul's Dick Story for Love Gun.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get a guitar solo. You're going to get another guitar solo. You're going to get a drum solo, and you're going to get a 13 song set list. So yeah, they sucked. 1982, when I hear those same 82, 83, man, when I hear those Kiss tapes, man, including Rio. Yeah. Gene was on fire, man. Paul was angry, man. You know that, you know, looking back, you know, Paul was bitter. He's saying stupid shit about Michael Jackson. He's making fun of Michael Jackson and other artists on stage, man. His overuse of the word fuck is beginning, you know.
I'm sure he cringes looking back at a lot of the things he said, man.
And Vinnie Vincent, for me, didn't help, man. Vinnie killed it for me, because hearing him just masturbate all over fucking what should be Ace Frehley guitar solos, man, is like painting the mustache on the Mona Lisa, man. You know, you play, and that's what I mean, you got to take your hat off to Tommy Thayer, because at least Tommy Thayer respects Kiss's past by playing the songs the right way, the way you know them, the way you want to hear them. When Vinnie Vincent just dumped fucking paint on top of what was already painted, I cringe, man. I cringe when I hear those tapes from those 82, 83 Creatures tour era. You know, Dr. Love, man, and Firehouse and Strutter, man, and, you know, hearing Vinny play on top of that, those songs, man, and just desecrate them. Nah.
Yeah, I don't know. But I don't know this. Maybe you can tell me, man, because I know that Kiss actually wasn't the only band on the bill that night. They tend to take credit for this giant crowd, but it was more of a festival. The night in Rio, or am I wrong?
That's another soft that's like a very sensitive subject for a lot of Kiss fans, is like this, the crowd size. The crowd size was big. I don't know what other bands played there that day. Did Kiss headline? Were they another act on a bill with 20 other big bands? I don't know. Maybe. I know Kiss plays festivals. I know that Kiss will only show you the size of their audience when they're in Europe. You know, when they go to Europe, they take these pictures with the 40,000 capacity.
Yeah.
But they're not going to do that when they go to Kansas.
Right.
Because there's only going to be, you know, 6,000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they don't want to show you that. And Kiss fans aren't going to brag about it and say, fuck the haters, we won. They're not going to show you that picture. They're only going to show you pictures from Europe and Australia. So I know that a lot of Kiss fans are very sensitive, man, when it comes to crowd size. So I'm not going to begin to question that Rio show unless I know like who was on the bill that day. Was that a Kiss crowd or were there five or six other bands that day? I don't know. I don't touch that one.
All right, we got to do a little little research.
Yeah. There's a reason why Kiss always references their stadium shows, because there's so few of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot more of them in Europe, you know. But
what about Roosevelt Stadium? Does that count?
Roosevelt Stadium, yeah.
Well, I don't know much about Roosevelt Stadium, man. I mean, it got demolished what year? Like 1980 or something?
They demolished Roosevelt in 84.
What was the capacity of that place?
Concerts. They stopped concerts there in 76. And the capacity of that place, I don't know. Maybe 13,000? I don't know. Not sure.
Where the hell was it even? What town was that in?
It's in Jersey City.
JC, all right.
Yeah, like, so like when you go over the North Bay extension, that Cassiano Bridge, which is like basically two. Oh, I forgot the name of the road, man, but it, Joyer's Point, I think it's called, or something Point. But when you look over, you see a lot of like townhouses built. You've seen it a million times, man, going over the bridge, man, when you're going into the city. You've seen it a million times. And Roosevelt Stadium was out on that, you know, it kind of protrudes into the water.
Yeah.
York Bay.
Right. But they played there in a destroyer tour, man.
Kiss played there in July 10th, 1976. And they tried to stop it because a kid was killed at a Yes concert about 3 weeks before. A kid was stabbed outside a Yes concert.
Yeah.
And the story is that Jersey City tried to stop the rest of the concerts from happening that summer, and they tried to cancel the Grateful Dead show and the Kiss concert, and they postponed the Grateful Dead, and John Scherf fought it. And but what did happen was they made sure that it was the last season of concerts ever in Roosevelt Stadium. But my theory of that is that the Meadowlands Giant Stadium opened that September 1976. There was a lot of politics involved. That's my theory. So the politics of the building of the Meadowlands has a lot to do with the end of Roosevelt Stadium for concerts, because now concerts were then moved to Giant Stadium. They were going to use this new facility called the Meadowlands. And I think there's a future book in that, actually, man, that I might research at some point in the next 5 years. The book I'm working on now actually deals with Kiss in the summer of 76. And I talk a lot about the Roosevelt Stadium concert and about a lot of the politics going on that summer. And I come to the conclusion that politics and not concert safety was what killed Roosevelt Stadium. The opening of the Meadowlands was what killed Roosevelt Stadium.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my long-winded rant.
Looking forward to that book, man.
So I've said my piece on Creatures. Happy 40th to Creatures of the Night.
Yeah, good talk.
And hopefully I don't intend... Rock Under Fire will be over this time next year because we're in our final season, and I know you'll be back for a few more episodes before it all ends.
Yeah, man.
But thankfully, we don't have to gather a year from now and have a 40th anniversary episode for Lick It Up.
Yeah, we don't have to go there.
Yeah, we don't have to go there ever.